Hello and welcome to Natural Health with CNM, the College of Naturopathic Medicine. I'm your host, Michelle Sanchez. In today's episode, I'm joined by natural chef Nina Foster, and we explore the world of plant-based eating and what it's like to be a natural chef. Nina will discuss the health benefits of plant-based eating, plant protein sources, and dispel misconceptions around eating a plant-based diet. Get ready as she reveals her kitchen cupboard essentials and shares some delicious plant-based recipes. We'll also delve into Nina's fascinating journey from graduation to establishing a thriving business and gain insights into her daily life as a natural chef. Nina has some valuable advice for aspiring natural chefs, including industry opportunities and the essential steps to kickstart your business. Nina is a qualified CNM-trained natural chef, food educator, food writer, and functional medicine health coach with a PhD in sociology and health and illness. While there may be many strings to her apron bow, every element of her work aims to bring joy, simplicity, and accessibility back into health and wellness. Nina has collaborated with renowned chefs like Anna Jones and Marcus Wiering, and her clientele includes brands such as Rude Health, HelloFresh, and HSBC. She's also been featured in media outlets like The Guardian and Grazia, and has worked as a recipe developer for several subscription boxes. Nina is a fermentation specialist and has taught fermentation to hundreds of people around the world, and had her recipes featured in the Fiber Fueled Cookbook, one of the New York Times bestsellers. As a passionate food educator, Nina also runs a wellness and inclusion consultancy circle, supporting and developing programs within organizations. Hi, Nina. Welcome and thank you for joining me today. It's great to have you on the show.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, today we're delving into plant-based eating and the best way to go about it, along with some helpful tips and recipes. And you're also going to be sharing insights into life after graduating as a natural chef and giving us a glimpse of what it's like to be a natural chef. But before we get stuck in, can you please tell us a bit about yourself and your experience in the industry?
So I was working as a public health academic and consultant into lots of different sort of NHS bodies. And, you know, as an academic and researcher, you're often seeing people battling with, you know, multiple health conditions and living a life where, you know, disease and comorbidities sort of take over. And I was really intrigued to think about how do we provide people with the resources and support they need to look after their well-being so they don't end up on multiple medications, you know, in these research studies being studied because they, you know, they have multiple disease conditions they're trying to manage. So I think I was really wanting to shift my career and focus into looking at how I support people with the tools they needed to look after their well-being. And I think food was always the thing that I loved. I loved cooking, I loved eating, and had the experience as well of being, you know, transforming my own diet and thinking about, you know, the impact that having a better diet made on my own well-being. And I thought there was something in like how I could do that and how I could do that professionally. So I wanted to like find something more creative, something less desk-based. And so I remember being on holiday and kind of being like, what am I supposed to be doing? Like, how can I figure out, you know, what's next for me? And I found the CNM course, and that was perfect because it combines, you know, my love of food with also the idea that, you know, food and, you know, is a powerful tool for looking after your well-being. And I thought this was like the next chapter that I needed to kind of start and embark on in my sort of career. So I did the course and trained. And when I left the course, I mean, I did so many different things. I mean, I think partially because I have so many interests and partially my personality is to, you know, to always give things a go. So I went from being the head chef for like a nature-based children's camp. So I was teaching cookery and food education and cooking with children. So I did that for a while. I also worked as a recipe writer and a food stylist. I ran, you know, food education programs in primary schools. I was a teaching chef for a year in a primary school doing food education and again, cookery with children. I've supported people one-to-one with making dietary and lifestyle changes and showing them how to do that through food, like in a hands-on cookery sort of way. Again, as I said, I write recipes and work as a food writer as well. So I've really just kind of spread the net quite widely in trying to work out what I wanted to be in terms of a natural chef. And it turns out I want to do and be in lots of spaces and do lots of things. But ultimately, that passion for supporting people with food as a tool to look after their well-being has pretty much remained throughout. And it is just like something that I'm so passionate about, having experienced firsthand and seeing the experiences for, you know, experiencing with people, working with people, of how making these dietary changes, you know, how that's really impacted on their life and their well-being. So it's, yeah, that's kind of where I've been and where I am now. So at the moment, I'm working largely as sort of a recipe writer, and I run lots of sort of corporate cook-alongs, like in the guise of how do we eat more healthily? How do we focus on our well-being? But also kind of bridging the gap between how do we eat healthily and also sustainably? Because we know that obviously having a diet that is good for us is also in many ways good for the planet. So I kind of bridge some of that gap with my cooking as well when I run courses. And I also support people, again, one-to-one with making dietary changes. So learning how to cook more plant-based, or learning how to use sort of more plant-based ingredients to kind of enrich their diet as it stands. And very much I'm of the school that I help people add in things that are great for supporting their well-being, and focus a bit less on, you know, taking lots of things out, because I think that that seems to work, you know, in terms of if you get more good stuff in, we start to slowly squeeze out the stuff that's not so good for us. And that's kind of generally how I work. And I also, you know, have brought in some coaching into what I do as well with another qualification, and found that that really helps me to support people in making some of those dietary changes, is having the tools to kind of, you know, help them find their motivation rather than me kind of being the one saying, you need to eat this, cook this that way. So I'm finding that that is a really powerful tool as well, to combine with my natural chef training to support people in making those sustainable changes.
Fantastic. What an amazing bio. And you do like to keep yourself busy.
I do.
I love that. But isn't it fantastic that all that experience and all those different avenues that you've experienced along your journey has really shaped your career? And it just goes to show that, you know, if you do train to become a natural chef, there are so many opportunities and so many avenues for you to explore, like all the different types of things that you're doing. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I think that was something that it took me a while to kind of get my head around. Because I think when I was studying in the course, you know, I knew there were things that I didn't want to do. Like I didn't want to run a cafe. I didn't want to be a very traditional chef in a kitchen, because I trained, you know, in my sort of late 30s and I already had two kids. And that wasn't the space I wanted to be in. And it took me a really long time to actually realize, like, the background that I bring is actually what will set my natural chef career apart, and the way that I use my training. And so it took me a while to really just lean into that. But I think it has ultimately helped me to create a natural chef career that feels really meaningful and purposeful for me. So that's been great.
Love that. Now, for those who aren't aware, can you just explain what a natural chef is and how it differs to other chefs?
Yeah. So I think it bridges the gap between being a chef and thinking, you know, how to cook food in a way that is, you know, delicious and, you know, beautiful to look at. But also you're learning how to use food and ingredients in a way that is therapeutic. So, I mean, for me, that pretty much, you know, how I embody those principles is everything is, you know, kind of whole foods based. So trying to use, you know, natural ingredients, stripping out, you know, all the kind of ready meal packaged, you know, additives and things like that. And just keeping it simple whole foods, but finding ways to make it, you know, obviously delicious, but also nutritious, and making sure that the food that we put on our plate at every meal contains nutrients that are going to support our well-being. And so that's kind of how I bridge the two. It's thinking about food, not just as something we purely just should enjoy because it is delicious, but also something that supports our well-being and has the power to make us feel great and be something that we can enjoy.
Yeah, food is fuel, and food can also be medicine as well. So that's the very unique aspect about the CNM natural chef training. It is a very much a one of a kind course, isn't it? That you get to learn about therapeutic cooking as well, and how to cook for different health conditions, which is really interesting. So what did you enjoy most about the course?
I mean, the fermentation aspect was something, and I mean, that's something that I do a lot of, and I've run, oh, I forgot to mention that. So I've run for years fermentation courses and linked to kind of gut health and helping people to like prioritize their gut health with, you know, and adding fermented foods in and teaching them how to make those fermented foods. But that was a huge love for me, and it still is. I think that sort of transformational aspect you get when you ferment something just completely was mind-blowing, and I absolutely became obsessed with it. So I think the fermenting was something that I really loved because it was something that, again, was completely new to me. But also, I think it was like, obviously, if you cook something in a way that's going to make it delicious, like you get that it's going to taste nice. But if you whack something in a jar with a bit of salt and let it like bubble away, like you don't really necessarily know what the end product is going to be. But, you know, it's something completely transformed. And I think that whole process was something that just completely blew my mind. So I love the fermenting aspect. I also love getting just to learn more about, you know, the medicinal properties of foods. And I think I find that kind of information is so useful to people when they're trying to, you know, learn how to eat in a different way. It's like, you know, what vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients are in foods, and, you know, what do those things do for us? And I mean, that's the sort of stuff that like I love knowing, and I also love imparting on people, particularly children. I think children, just because of the way that their brains often, you know, they love information, they love learning. You know, adults do, but children definitely have that kind of, you know, just that pure quest for knowledge kind of coursing through their veins. And I find that information is really useful for getting people to understand their food and how to prepare their food and why they're eating foods. And then obviously that, I think, is something you learn on the course that I absolutely enjoy to this day and feel really privileged to kind of know about. I also loved learning how to use alternative ingredients. So looking at how you use different types of flour and, you know, how you can make things, you know, egg substitutes, that, you know, there's a plethora of things you can use instead of eggs and how you can do that. And so, and I think that's really helped me just really flex my cooking in so many different ways, being able to know how to use different ingredients. I think it was during lockdown when, you know, we cast our memories back when like flour was so hard to come by. I remember I was in a panic. What are we going to do for flour?
Oh gosh, yeah. stock up.
Yeah, exactly. I remember doing an Instagram post on like all the other flours out there and like how you can use them and how you can combine them. And that was obviously information I learned on the course and feel really lucky to have that grounding in, yeah, how to use alternative ingredients. And I think that's also something that obviously more traditionally trained chefs won't have the knowledge of. So I think I feel really lucky that that's something that I know how to do and feel comfortable like kind of, you know, experimenting with as well as a result of what I've learned on the course.
Definitely. It's that life-changing knowledge, isn't it, that you can use for the rest of your life and to help others. And you're going to be sharing some of those kitchen cupboard essentials a bit later on, which I'm looking forward to hearing all about. So how did you transition from graduation to establishing a thriving business and branching out into all the avenues that you do today? What are the steps that you took to get that off the ground?
I took because I think you'll have to do, I can't remember how many hours it is, but your sort of internship hours on the course. I took that and did basically everything that I could possibly find. You know, I think I was really proactive in writing to people to try and get experience and, you know, any contacts I had, you know, who knew somebody, I used to try and get experience working across the industry. So I think I really put in the work to get those internship hours in lots of different spaces and places, like from cookery schools to, you know, food sets to recipe testing. You know, I did a ton of try to find lots of different things that I could do. And then those became, you know, sort of connections that I had, you know, to springboard me into the industry when I graduated. And I think, yeah, you know, once you start to build that network of people you know and people who trust you and, you know, you like working with, you just kind of, things start to kind of, you know, develop from there. So I think that's what really helped me, was just being really proactive about what I wanted to do with my internship hours. And I think I'd actually did almost, I think, not quite double, but a lot more than like I think was required, just because I wanted to get a full breadth of experience across the industry. And again, some of it was actually even paid work that I managed to land as well. So it wasn't all kind of just, you know, for course credit. But yeah, and I think that's what really helped me kind of start to make connections in the industry. Because again, it was, you know, I was 38, having worked in, you know, academic office type jobs. So I didn't have, you know, that kind of like, I didn't have that ready-made network of people to step into. So I had to be just really proactive about developing it. And that stood me in really good stead.
Well, that's it. It's that proactive networking, and that's what opens the doors, isn't it? And I think, you know, if you work hard and you do a good job, like with any industry, it's you know, getting yourself out there and getting a name and doing all those steps. So that's really important. So like being a professional natural chef involves more than just cooking. Give us a glimpse into your daily life and tell us what a typical day looks like for you.
Oh God, no day is typical. that's the thing. No day for me is typical. I think I've always juggled lots of different things as part of my natural chef career. And for years as well, I've also combined a career in consultancy. So I've had for years a parallel life being a consultant in sort of the research and diversity and inclusion space, because that's also what I worked in before. So every day is different. But I think for me, it always, because of what I've learned and what I've learned on the course, and also what I know and experience has been important for my own well-being, that trickles into my family life and sort of how obviously I shop, eat, cook, how I approach kind of health and wellness. So I think my days are, you know, I think whatever they look like in terms of different tasks, like they're very much kind of rooted in a philosophy of cooking whole foods, you know, trying to enjoy food in a way that is more mindful, you know, helping to support my children nutritionally and teaching them about food and what's in things and why, you know, things are, you know, what kind of ingredients, you know, are good for supporting this or that. So that really underpins like my home life. But in terms of tasks, like it can really vary. Sometimes it's being in the kitchen if I'm doing, you know, if I've got a recipe commission. So last week I had a recipe commission for a magazine. So a lot of my time was like in the kitchen. You know, you got to do the shopping, the kind of, you know, planning for what you're going to do, writing it down, and then it's in the kitchen testing things. So that can be some days. Again, some days are seeing some of my coaching clients, kind of peppered in there as well. So, I mean, there's never a day that's the same. But I think for me, that is what I enjoy. I think for me, it's been very much about having the space to carve out a career that feels really meaningful to me and that kind of really brings together all the things that I'm passionate about. So that's kind of how my days play out. Just a lot of different things sometimes. But obviously, I think I'm working in a way that feels in line with what I enjoy doing. So that always feels great.
And variety is the spice of life, as they say. And what would you say is the most rewarding aspects of being a natural chef?
I mean, I guess it is just that knowledge and understanding you have about food and how you can apply that like across every meal, every dish that you create. But also, I think for me, I just feel so privileged to know these things and to be able to share them, you know, whether it is in a recipe, whether it is in a one-to-one basis, you know, if I'm working with a client or, you know, or if I'm running a food education program. I'm at the moment designing some food education for a local primary school. And I feel like it's just so great to be able to, you know, just go in and teach children about this, because I think this is just like, they love learning. I love, you know, I love teaching and interacting with them, but they're walking away with something that, like, you know, most people twice their age don't know. And I think it just sets them off on like a trajectory of knowing how to not only just feed themselves, but look after their health and well-being through food. So I feel really privileged to be able to impart that knowledge and share that knowledge, really.
It's fundamental. And I think, yeah, starting when they're young, before they go down that sort of ultra processed rabbit hole when they become teenagers is a really good thing, setting those foundations, isn't it?
Yeah. And I know that that's going to happen. And even with my own children, for example, I know the lure of, you know, the parties and the things are there. But we talk about food and we have open discussions about, you know, what things make us feel good and what things don't. And, you know, I think the more we can teach people, you know, the knowledge and information about food, but also how to tune into like how they feel when they eat certain foods and make those kind of like those leaps without being told you should eat this, this is good, this is bad. You know, I think we can teach people to tune into their own bodies and understand how they feel when they eat certain things. And also, I think that is probably the best thing that we can do for children, but anyone really. I think, you know, I work with adults who still, you know, aren't in tune to like understanding of how their bodies feel when they eat certain things, or how, you know, they feel when they, you know, when they look after themselves and they start to think, oh, actually, that fatigue, that's gone away. Like, oh yeah, I didn't really realize that if I ate differently, I could feel like this. But so I feel like that is like the most amazing thing to be able to support people with, is that knowledge about food, but also that ability to tune into their bodies and understand how they respond to foods and see like what life is like when they eat in a way that supports their health, and how that, like, you know, how they just feel so much better, how they just feel so much different as a result.
Mm. Yeah, it's just really important to have those conversations. And I do the same with my daughter. And quite often I was like, why do you always have to be the healthy mum? But it's important, because then they gain that understanding. And it's like, you know, what they put in their body and how it has an effect. And if they have too much sugar and how that's going to affect their tummy, for example. So yeah, it's great that you're doing this.
Yeah, and I think as well, it gives people the tools that, like, you know, sometimes they're going to go off the rails. You know, holiday seasons, for example, you know, it's all about, you know, excess. And I think we could spend, you know, we can make better choices, but, you know, inevitably things often, you know, don't go as planned. But I think if you have that knowledge and understanding and those tools, you know how to, like, claw it back and, you know, get yourself back on track, because you know how to do that. And you're not kind of like, oh, things feel completely out of control. You know, my eating isn't in hand and I feel crap, and you don't know how to fix it. I think when you know and you understand how to use food in that way, you have the control. You can take back that control and sort yourself out. And that, I think, is like, you know, so powerful.
It really is. Have you encountered many challenges along the way working in the industry, and how have you overcome them?
Oh, yeah.
Many.
Many. It's interesting. So as I said, I think there's lots of, like, I don't know if it's intentional, but I think inherent kind of like exploitation in the industry. A lot of like things people want you to do for free and for exposure. And I think it's really hard when you're starting out in the industry to know like where it's going to lead. So you kind of take these leaps constantly. But I think people do in the industry try it on, and they do kind of want to take your knowledge and your expertise and use it for their profile building, for their benefits, and not give you anything in return. So it can be really difficult to make a profitable career when you're constantly kind of being asked to do things for exposure. So that can be really hard, because you have to do some of it, but it's kind of trying to know and weigh up when and how to do it. And I think as a new person, especially with, you know, the world of social media, because, you know, everybody kind of wants to be seen on Instagram, and like you have lots of brands approaching you on Instagram for content, and it can be really hard to like know when you should give away things for free and where it's gonna, you know, help support you. Because at the end of the day, we all have to earn a living. Like there's no shame in saying, actually, I have bills to pay. And even still now, I mean, I had a drinks brand that, you know, is a non-alcoholic drinks brand, I won't name any names, who asked for loads of free content. And you're like, but this is, you know, I've studied and trained and worked for years. And, you know, I think there's a lot of knowledge that I hold that like I just can't continually just give away for free, because ultimately I have to live as well. So that can be really hard. So those are some of the challenges. I think that's the largest challenge in the industry.
And how do you navigate it? Is it a case of choosing certain opportunities and just declining the ones that you think are not going to be quite right? Well, how do you strike that balance?
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I often like think about, will I enjoy it? You know, and I think sometimes as well, like if it's for, you know, someone that I know and trust and know that like, you know, they couldn't afford to pay me, but they would like promote me in some other way or support me in some other way, or be the person to say, oh, well, you know, like I've got some friends who could do with, you know, speaking to you, like, you know, it would be, you know, there could be some kind of mutual exchange, then I think that helps. But I ultimately think it's a really hard decision. It's a personal decision, depending on, you know, so many different personal factors. But I ultimately think you have to do what feels right to you. If it doesn't feel right, then don't do it. Even if you think it's going to be a great opportunity, you're going to have to do the work. And if you don't feel right doing it, and if you feel like you're compromising your integrity at any point, don't do it. Listen to your gut. I know it's, people talk about your gut instinct, but your gut will tell you, and don't ignore it, because it's telling you for a reason. Yeah, I think your gut will tell you whether or not. But again, if you're going to enjoy it, if it seems fun, you know, if you've got some reasons that make you think maybe I should do it, then, you know, explore it. I think I always say to people, you know, like, don't, you know, turn down opportunities, you know, just without considering them. But if you consider it and you don't feel, if it doesn't feel good, then don't do it. But if you consider it, you think, well, maybe, explore it. You know, you don't have to say yes straight away, like have a conversation. But again, you'll get a sense of whether or not it's for you. And if it's not, then don't be afraid to walk away, because something else will come along, or you'll be able to take that interaction and experience and think about how you can make a space where you feel good doing something similar or different to that. So I think, yeah.
Great advice.
You know, I've paid for a course to learn lots of things and have spent years, you know, studying and practicing and you know, honing my craft. And it's really hard when, like, you know, on the one hand, it feels flattering. On the other hand, it's like, is this exploitation?
Yeah. And I think it happens in quite a few different industries, doesn't it? Especially for those starting out. So it's just about having good boundaries, isn't it? And you know, knowing what's going to be beneficial to you and to broaden your experience, but not actually, you know, leave you kind of destitute because you're doing all this stuff for free.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if all else fails, ask a friend. I mean, people who aren't freelance would think like, why would you work for free? I often ask friends, they'd be like, well, why would you do that for free? Like, this is your job. And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, you're right. Because I think often we're often really passionate about it. And we think like, oh yeah, we love talking about what we do. But at the end of the day, like, that's your career. So I think you have to approach it as, yeah, be a bit more like business-minded in some respects and say, actually, like, should I be working for free all the time? Probably not. Because I can't then actually build a career that I love. And you know, and you don't want to end up resenting the work that you do because you're not able to like meet your own basic needs, right? So I think that's important too.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And I think the same happens with, you know, naturopaths, nutritionists, you know, people always asking for free advice and people always giving so much. But yeah, there gets that point where you have to say, come and see me for a consultation. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Natural Health with CNM. Still to come, I talk to Nina about the opportunities available for natural chefs in the industry, kitchen cupboard essentials for plant-based cooking, and simple and delicious plant-based recipes you can make at home. Are you or a loved one facing health challenges? Interested in a rewarding career in natural therapies? Or looking to transform your passion for healthy cooking into a profession? CNM offers a wide range of short courses and diploma training both online and in class. Contact us today for a limited time to save 10% on short courses using the code PODCAST. Visit www.cnmpodcast.com. So I'm sure many of our aspiring natural chefs that might be listening are wondering about the opportunities available, you know, after completing their training. And I know you've talked about all the different opportunities you've had. So what doors open up for graduates and how can they carve out a niche for themselves in the industry?
Yeah, I think it's really hard, first of all, especially I think in the era of social media where everybody seems to be doing everything and it all seems really glossy. So I invite people to step away from that and just really tune into who they are, why they're doing what they're doing, and find, like, you know, what they uniquely bring. And whether that's not, you know, if you've had a career in marketing before and now you're wanting to retrain as a chef, like, how can you bring those existing skills, that existing skill set into what you do to make it distinctively you? So I think unless you're like trying to get out of something, you know, completely, like, there's still scope to bring in, like, you know, a bit of who you are before you train as a natural chef into your natural chef career. And I think that makes you wholly distinctive and it makes your point of view, I think, much more appealing to the people that you want to be appealing to. And I think finding that and tuning into that is really important, because otherwise you'll spend your, you know, your career trying to make it look like someone else's and, yeah, probably not being very successful at it and feeling like you're failing because you're not, you know, Deliciously Ella or, you know, whoever else. But, like, you know, that's her career and, like, she's made an amazing career, but that's hers. So I think, yeah, find a way to make it uniquely yours. And yeah, I think that's the most important thing you can do.
And I think that's a really key point, not compare yourself to others in the industry, because I think a lot of people do that or are guilty of that across different industries. And it's very easy to, you know, especially with social media, oh, she's got a million followers and how am I ever going to be like that? But you're not going to be like that because that's, you're not her and she's not you. So yeah, I think that's we've always got to be mindful of that. And as you say, it's leveraging your existing experience and skills and your network and reaching out to people and kind of seeing how you can, yeah, broaden your opportunities through your, through the people you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as well, like when I was training, I had this little like mantra that I used to say to myself when like, you know, cause here I was like, you know, I was 38, like I had two kids, like, you know, trying to, you know, completely shift my industry. And I was like, who am I to be doing this? Like if I ask somebody for something, like they're just going to be like, who are you? But I used to say to myself, like, you know, be bold, be brave. And like, you know, I just would like repeat that over and over to myself. Like I have to go out there. I have to ask, I have to prioritize this because this is what I want to be doing. So it's going to be scary, but I just have to go out there, make those asks. Like they might seem ridiculous, but I do it. And I'm just going to just not overanalyze it and just be, you know, yeah, have some bravery in doing it. And so I think that's also what really helped me because again, oftentimes we like talk ourselves out of things, don't we? And then like, we just, yeah, we don't actually achieve anything because we've not let ourselves like give it a go. So yeah, I think that really helped me as well, is to just push myself out of what felt comfortable and then just made the asks and just like just took those leaps. And then yeah, I think that's kind of what I continue to do, really. Just keep asking and keep being brave. And like, you know, you might get told no. I remember when I was trying to like get into food styling, because I thought, well, this sounds great. I remember emailing, you know, about 50, 60 different food stylists to try and get work experience. And I'd probably say 45 ignored me. And a few came back to me. And then, you know, I was like, okay, well, I never would have known if I hadn't asked. And again, like of that got back to me, I probably worked with about two or three quite regularly. And then that led on to, you know, other opportunities for solely me to work, you know, as a lead stylist. So I think it's all about, yeah, just, yeah, making those asks and being brave. And because, yeah, sometimes it might not exactly turn out exactly how you expect it. But like, yeah, you don't know, though, if you don't do it.
Exactly. And I love that. And it's just be you, isn't it? And I think your story can really resonate with quite a few of our listeners, you know, that have got to around 30, 40 and, you know, want it, or, you know, later than that, and wanting to change career, or have got kids and a family. And it's like, gosh, how do I make this transition? I've got all these commitments, I've got financial commitments, kids to think about. And how can I do that? So I think, you know, you've done that, and you've managed to make, you know, really successful business, and you love your job, and it's really inspiring. So I think, you know, your story will really, you know, resonate with a lot of our listeners.
Well, I hope so. And I also think as well, what's really been useful to me is to like redefine what success looks like for me and for me only. And I know that sounds a bit like waffle, but to be honest, you know, I'd come from a career in consulting, and, you know, I kind of don't think I understood that maybe I kind of thought that, you know, like I'd make the same sort of, you know, I'd have the same sort of earning potential in food, like, of course, but, you know, it's different. And I think I walked out of a very high paid job to do a job that paid me a bit less, but at the same time, I have so much more like joy for what I do. And, you know, it's taken time, but I'm building that, you know, that financial, you know, the finances are starting to mirror what I was earning before, but it takes time. But also I just feel so much better about what I do. And I enjoy what I do so much better as a result of like, yeah, being in an industry and working in a way that I feel so deeply passionate about and that I love so much. So I think you have to really think about like, what is successful? Is it just about making the money? And if that's what you're chasing, then probably this isn't going to be, you know, the best option for you. Like, but I think, you know, you have to really think about what it is you want and just go for it. Really just put in the effort, put in the work, you know, be brave, take those leaps, and you can craft something that feels good to you, whatever that looks like, and it will be yours and uniquely yours.
Great advice. Now, just before we move on to plant-based eating, I just wanted to ask, you know, for those considering a career as a natural chef, what would one piece of advice do you have for them? And what's that one piece of advice you wish you had when you started out on your journey?
It wasn't advice that I was given, but I guess instinctively I just knew to do it because it felt like it was such a big jump for me. So I think when I left my full-time career in consulting, I had a 1.5-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I think I just just knew I needed to make it work because, like, you know, I was at that stage in my life where I just wanted a career that felt like me. So I think just instinctively for me, it was like, I've got to do what it takes to make this work. So I think the advice is do what it takes to make it work. Like, don't feel like, you know, don't feel defeated. It's going to be hard, but just do what it takes to get you to where you want to be. If it's what you really want, then you iron out the path there, you know, to get you there. And I think it is just that putting yourself out there, asking for those opportunities, because if you really want to make it work, you have to just go for it and don't be afraid to do that. So I think that's the advice I would give. And I think, again, I don't think I necessarily got that advice. I kind of just did it. But I think looking back now, that's definitely the advice I would have given myself, because as I was doing it, it didn't always feel great. It didn't feel natural. It kind of felt that I was just like, you know, closing my eyes and pressing send on emails, requesting, you know, it was really hard. It was a complete battle with myself to do these things. But I think looking back at that now, I would definitely say that to myself. Like, if you really want it to work, like, you just have to, you got to commit yourself to it, and you'll make it happen.
Just got to jump off the cliff.
Well, yeah, maybe look down first before you jump, but maybe take a little parachute with you or some provisions. But I think, you know, you just have to really just commit yourself to it, and it's going to be hard. And I mean, I don't want people to think that, like, my trajectory has not been, like, you know, it's not been easy. It's been a lot of, like, scraping by sometimes. It's been a lot of self-doubt. There's been a lot of times where I'm like, what am I doing? But ultimately, like, I know this is, like, what I want to be doing with my life. So I just keep exploring all the avenues to help me make it work.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And I think, you know, everyone that we see on social media that are doing all these amazing things, they all started from somewhere. And I can guarantee it wouldn't have been an easy journey. There would have been lots of bumps and challenges. So, but we forget about that, don't we? Just think, oh, look what they're doing and I'm stuck here. But yeah, you've got to be mindful of that for sure.
And I also think as well, we're looking from the outside in, it looks far more glamorous than it really is. I think when I was, like, starting out, like, in the food styling industry, so I worked for, like, magazines and on books and things, and I thought, oh God, this is the coolest thing you could possibly do. And, you know, writing a cookbook, like, amazing. But once you kind of know, like, what goes on behind the scenes, you're like, actually, this is not what I thought it was. So, and you don't know until you, like, give it a go. But I think also we just shouldn't sit outside and judge and, like, you know, think what we think is, like, a accurate depiction of the reality of what that would take to do or achieve. You got to understand that, like, you only see the good glossy bits, but also you won't know the kind of underbelly until you, like, put yourself in those positions to kind of learn.
Very true. Now let's move on to plant-based eating, which has gained significant popularity in recent years. Can you provide our listeners with an overview of what plant-based eating entails and the benefits for health and well-being?
My interpretation, and it's not aligned with, like, one school or one sort of dietary choice in any way, shape or form, but it's very much about making plant-based foods, you know, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, whole grains, herbs, spices, a big feature of your everyday eating, your shopping, your cooking, every meal. You know, those are a huge focal point. And whatever your kind of, like, you know, relationship is with animal products, having that be a smaller portion or not a portion at all of what you're eating, but really about having those plant-based nutrients being front and center to every meal and into the way you eat and cook. And I think, you know, we definitely have moved away from, in so many respects, the kind of, like, you know, that the protein, most often animal protein, being the focal point of our meals and crafting a meal that really centers plants. And we know that that way of eating, because of the nutrient profile, is important for our health, but it's also important for the health of the planet. We know reducing our consumption of animal proteins, you know, if they're on our plate, they're a smaller portion of our plate, that's actually, you know, more beneficial for the planet, but it's also important for our health. I mean, if we talk about, you know, from, you know, the perspective of, you know, vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients, you know, you really can't get that whole variety of things you need to keep your body ticking over, happy and healthy, if you're really not focusing on plants. But also, I think, again, we know if we're thinking about the gut health angle, which we know gut health is ever so popular at the moment, and we talk about, you know, having that variety in your diet. And you can't have variety in your diet if you don't center plants. So I think from a gut perspective, from a nutritional perspective, from a planetary perspective, you know, focusing on plants and making those a huge feature in the way you eat, or you shop, eat and cook is what we're talking about.
Are there any sort of misconceptions or challenges related to plant-based eating that you frequently encounter, and how do you normally address them?
Yeah, so I think when people hear plant-based eating, they think it's vegan, or that you have to be vegan, or that you have to be vegetarian to like eat plants. And you're like, actually, no. And you can be a meat eater or an animal product consumer, but still have a largely plant-based diet. That is possible. And I think, you know, plants aren't just for people who are vegetarian and vegan. And equally, like, you don't have to subscribe to being vegetarian or vegan if you center plants in your diet. So I think that's the largest misconception. But I think also there's a skills gap as well. And I think that people just don't really know how to do that for the most part, because vegetables, particularly if you are, I guess, kind of, you know, if you've had cooking lessons most people don't learn how to cook, right? So I think you just kind of like pick up, you know, the way to cook and eat from, you know, the cues around you. And if you've not had the exposure to eating in a way that centers plants, like, you're probably just not going to have the skills to do it. So I think that's the hugest problem I encounter as well with people, is going, well, how do I do that? Like, I've got this aubergine. Like, I don't know what to do with that. Like, you know, do I just roast it and have it on the side with my chicken? And you're like, well, actually, you can do a lot more with it. So I think it's a skills problem as well. So people just don't have the knowledge and skills together to really do that. So yeah, I think those are the challenges.
No, I agree. And I think another one that comes up is, well, if I don't eat animal protein sources, I'm not going to have enough protein. And, you know, they're, you know, wondering what protein they can get from plants. So could you touch on that a little bit and give us some examples of some plant-based proteins?
Yeah. So obviously you've got your pulses and legumes. So that's a source of protein. You've got nuts and seeds. That's a source of protein. And, you know, I think your vegetables as well, like lots of your other vegetables, peas, for example, are a great source of protein. Obviously, peas are a legume, but, you know, you get protein in vegetables, but also your whole grains. So when we're eating whole unrefined grains, we're getting protein as well. I always teach people how to what we call protein combine. So when you're focusing on plants and trying to get more protein from plants, you have to combine the sources of plant-based protein. And a lot of it is interesting when you think about it. A lot of these things are kind of like naturally already kind of go together. So, and lots of different food cultures. It's like people had this wisdom about food and how you feed yourself a long time ago. And we somehow seem to have like forgotten how to do this. But like, for example, like beans and whole grain rice, like protein combining perfectly. And they're like a natural sort of like occurrence together in lots of different, you know, cuisines. But protein combining is very much about combining your plant sources of protein together to get a complete protein. So, you know, whole grains and pulses, nuts and pulses go together perfectly. You want to be combining either nuts and seeds with your pulses, or nuts and seeds with your whole grains or pulses, but essentially just putting those all together on a plate. And as I said, again, a lot of them go together like intuitively. Sometimes it might be a bit more of like, okay, actually, what do I do here? And I often work with people to kind of like have that kind of running checklist in their head for when they're creating a meal, you know, thinking about where your fruit and veg coming from, you know, where's your healthy fat coming from, where's your protein, and how can you combine those sources to make sure you're getting those complete proteins. So just having that little checklist in your head as you kind of start to think about how you plan your meals, how if you're even going to the fridge and just pulling things together to assemble to make a meal, just having that little checklist running through your head as you do that really helps you to like get that full sort of balance, but also in terms of protein, helps you to kind of tick those boxes in terms of getting your sort of focus of plant-based protein. But not to say that you can't combine animal protein in there as well, but knowing that if you're going to be relying solely on plants for your protein, that you have to combine the sources together.
Mm-hmm. And for those that aren't aware, the reason for that is that they contain like the full spectrum of amino acids. So amino acids are the building blocks of protein. So like an animal source will have that complete protein. But what Nina was saying is that with nuts and seeds, certain plant-based proteins, they'll have some of these amino acids and the other half will have the other half. So you need to combine them to have that complete spectrum of amino acids. So no, thank you for explaining that. And mushrooms are also a great source of protein, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I was saying a lot of our vegetables will have protein in them. And again, it's just learning that and knowing what has protein in it and then not just thinking it has to be meat, fish, eggs is important. So yeah, and that's a lot of what I think we can help people to do with the understanding that we have of food as natural chefs is what else has protein in it.
So when it comes to plant-based eating, having the right ingredients on hand is crucial. So Nina, what are your go-to kitchen cupboard essentials for creating a nourishing plant-based meals?
Yeah, so I think with plant-based meals, you have to think about adding flavor. So having a variety of, sort of spices is always a good start. So things like cumin and paprika and sumac, maybe a bit of za'atar as well. But having loads of different sort of spices in your cupboard is always a good idea. And nuts and seeds are another big one. So, you know, toasted chopped nuts or, you know, nuts kind of milled in with things to kind of create a nice textural consistency is always a good idea. Tahini is another star in my kitchen. I use it from anything from a salad dressing to baking, but also obviously in the usual hummus, making any kind of hummus or bean dip. My ferments I love having in my kitchen. So whether it's fermented chili or sauerkraut, or even using some of the brine kind of left over from a ferment, I use that in a variety of ways, either to add into a meal or to use to flavor if it's a bit of leftover brine that, you know, add a flavor into a soup, or also using it to make salad dressings to add some flavor and also some great stuff for your gut too. I also love having lemon. Lemon's a great one. It's a flavor lifter. So a bit of lemon zest or a bit of lemon juice helps to kind of lift anything you're cooking. Extra virgin olive oil, so an organic cold pressed olive oil. Great for drizzling and adding lots of additional sort of delicious polyphenols and other antioxidants to any meal. But again, olive oil is a nice flavor conductor, so it will help to kind of bring all your flavors together at the end. And yeah, some cupboard staples like grains. So quinoa is one that I always have. And I like to use the kind of mixed color quinoa because you get lots of different kind of textures and flavors with those, and also lots of different a variety of nutrients. And also I love frika, which is a nice kind of Middle Eastern grain, a bit like wheat, but has a really lovely kind of springy chewiness to it. Goes well in salads, or you can use it as a substitute for rice. But yeah, those are some of the things that I like to keep on hand when I'm just kind of grabbing and pulling things together.
Thank you for sharing those. I think that's really important, isn't it? Having a well-stocked kitchen cupboard with things that you can just pull out is really important. So that's given people a really, really great idea. And thanks for suggesting Vika. It's not one that I've used before. So I'm going to check that one out.
Yeah, it's great. It's really delicious. Yeah, one of my favorites.
Now, do you have any simple and delicious plant-based recipes you could share with us?
Yeah. So if, depending on whether you're, you know, breakfast or lunch or dinner, I think there's a huge, you know, there's so many opportunities to get in lots of different plant-based varieties. So a nice simple breakfast would be something like oat pancakes. So I use oat, a bit of banana, flaxseed, mill that up with some cinnamon and probably a bit of kefir as well to kind of add just to make them a bit fluffy and a bit softer. Blend those up with a bit of egg as well and make nice little pancakes. Those make a quick, easy breakfast. Take about 5 minutes to kind of assemble, blend. Top those with some nut butter, some fruit, whether it's fresh fruit or compote, depending on what you've got in. Makes a really lovely, delicious and slightly like special breakfast, I think, but really quick to get on the table too. A nice, easy lunch would be something like, I mean, obviously, I think lunch is a great time to kind of really just take a break. I know a lot of us work from home. Take a break, kind of clear your head, get in the kitchen, do some chopping. So a nice kind of veg pad thai. So some nice whole grain brown rice noodles. Let those soak in a bit of hot water. Julienne up some veg, like some cucumber, pepper, carrot, and maybe if you wanted to cook off some mushrooms as well. And then make a nice sort of peanut butter sauce. If you've got any kind of peanut butter or nut butter, you can make a nice sauce with that. A bit of grated ginger, a bit of hot water, maybe from your noodles even. Lots of herbs if you've got them in. And just kind of make a nice sort of consistency of sauce that will stir through the noodles. Pop in your veg. You can either stir fry the veg if you want, but if it's cucumber, I wouldn't cook that. Or you can just leave it fresh, but have a nice kind of just colorful rainbow lunch. Filling, delicious, and kind of ticks all those boxes in terms of getting your protein in, your variety of veg, and obviously your whole grains as well.
Sounds delicious and so easy as well, isn't it? And I think if you prep your vegetables beforehand, like some people do their food prep. That can be another way. And then you can just, you know, as you say, chuck it together and you've got an easy lunch or a dinner.
Exactly. And if you get the sort of noodles that you just have to put in boiling water and they just kind of rehydrate, you can, you know, you can just let those sit for a few minutes while you're kind of assembling the rest, and then it's ready to go.
Amazing. And the pancakes are fantastic again for kids, especially because you're getting that protein in and that fiber. So that's a nice breakfast that kids always love, isn't it?
It is. It goes down really well in my house. And sometimes I even add additional spices. So sometimes I'll add a bit of turmeric, a bit of black pepper, a bit of cardamom, and give them just a bit more flavor and spicing as well. But obviously adding in those different spices brings in additional nutritional benefits.
Yeah, so they could be savory or sweet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those with us.
Yeah, no, great. No, I love sharing ideas. And I think the great thing is to just have things that are easy to assemble, you know, full of variety. And it doesn't have to be difficult, and it doesn't have to be, you know, I think kind of overblown in terms of what we're using to kind of keep ourselves healthy. It doesn't need to be anything really special. It can be just everyday foods chosen well, and just making sure you're getting in that variety. That's really important.
And I think this is the challenge that people come across. They think that eating a plant-based diet has to be complicated, or you need all these different ingredients, and you don't. You just keep it simple, making sure you've got the veg in there, got a good quality protein, and tuck some herbs and spices in, and you've got a delicious meal.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, as you transition to more of a plant-based style of eating, you will gain skills and confidence. And I think it does require a bit of skill to kind of think, as we said originally, and like a bit more inventively, how you kind of put more, you know, plant-based ingredients at the focal point of your meal. But once you start to do that, you'll gain the skills and confidence to kind of venture out and be more adventurous, you know, from, you know, starting from thinking, how am I going to get these lentils to taste interesting, to thinking about, you know, how many ways can I use lentils? It'll soon become like, you know, you'll become an old hand at doing it. But it just takes time and practice. But definitely focusing on, I think, initially getting as much variety into your diet as possible, and then going from there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And do you have like a dip recipe, like a hummus that you could share with us, a simple one?
Yeah, actually, I made one at the weekend. I had friends coming around and I didn't have any kind of nibbles to hand. But luckily, I've always got my cupboard staples. So I used a jar of white beans, some lemon juice, some tahini, a bit of garlic, and I had some sun-dried tomatoes in the fridge. So I pop those in, whiz them up. Oh, and I added a tiny bit of harissa as well. That's another one of my kind of go-tos. A bit of harissa in, and blended that together, and had a slightly spicy white bean sun-dried tomato dip. But again, so simple, so easy. And, you know, you can, if you've got a food processor or a blender, something you can make in minutes or from things in your cupboard. And, you know, you're ticking the boxes in terms of having your protein there, you know, lots of variety. You could toss in some coriander as well on top, drizzle over some olive oil when you finish, just to bring the flavors all together. And you're ticking so many of those plant-based boxes.
I love that one. I'm going to try that. That's very creative. I love that though. You've got all those different flavors in there. And I bet your friends love coming around to your place for some lunch.
Well, yeah, I mean, I try to keep it interesting. I think whenever I'm cooking as well, like, you know, I think you can make a dip, for example, but what else can I add in there that's going to like increase the kind of plant variety? So again, like adding the sun-dried tomatoes, adding in the harissa, maybe adding in some cumin. So I always think, how can I make this more flavorful, but also increase the kind of variety of plants in? And when you do that, I mean, you know, you're getting something delicious. You're also getting something that is giving your body the nutrients it needs. And that's a really good feeling.
I love that. Well, thank you. Thank you again for all the recipes.
Yeah, no, my pleasure.
Pancakes are always delicious and super quick as well. As you say, you just kind of blend everything up. And those ones, the recipe you've just given is really, you know, got lots of good protein as well. So it anchors the children's blood sugars for a day of school and learning.
Yeah. And it's something that they still will enjoy, and they don't necessarily like, you know, balk at the fact that it's not dusted in powdered sugar, or, you know, it's not made of white flour. You know, it's feeding, like, and as I said, you know, we said earlier, food serves so many different purposes. It feeds us and nourishes our body. It feeds our soul. It helps us to, like, you know, experience lots of different, you know, situations and emotions in a very different way. So food is so important to us. And I think we feel so many needs with food that is, you know, good for you.
Mm. And you can, if you want to go the extra mile, you could get some shape cutters and make it even more fun for the kids and make little shapes out of your pancakes.
Get up a few minutes earlier for that. But yeah.
Yes.
Go for it.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing all your wisdom and recipes and fantastic knowledge with us. It's been so fantastic and so inspiring. Where can people find more information about you and the work that you do?
So I have a website, is www.ninafosterfood.com, and it's Nina with an E, which is always very tricky. So it's ninafosterfood.com. And so, yeah, you can find me there. I am also on Instagram. I try to spend not as much time as I probably should on Instagram, but I am also there. So I'm nina.foster.food, just to make things complicated. I added in some extra full stops. If you go to the website, find me on the website, drop me an email. I'd love to chat.
Well, thank you. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you again for coming on as a guest.
Thank you. It's been great. It's been really, I love talking food, and I love talking about the power of food and how it really just, it can just make us feel great. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Well, that's all we've got time for today. Thanks for listening. And a big thank you to Nina for sharing her wealth of knowledge and experience with us. You can find all the information discussed today and more about Nina in the show notes on the CNN Podcast website at www.cnnpodcast.com. And if you're interested in learning more about becoming a natural chef or a vegan natural chef, head to www.naturalchef.com. And if you'd like to learn more about nutrition or natural therapies, check out CNM's range of short courses and diploma training on the CNM website at www.naturopathy-uk.com. And we also have a series of open events coming up, and you can find all the details under the events section of the website. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe through your favorite podcatcher so you don't miss any future episodes. While you're there, we'd love it if you could leave us a rating or review, as this helps us when creating new content.